Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, November 25th, 2012. This, believe it or not, is episode 930. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Go to ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and enter Tech Guy. And by Ford, featuring lane keeping and adaptive cruise control technology designed to improve the overall driving experience. Check out these systems on the 2013 Ford Fusion and learn even more at Ford.com/technology. And by Ring Central. I love my cloud-based phone system from Ring Central. Zero startup costs, and Ring Central is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Good to see you. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players. Well, we don't have to talk about it. Does anybody even use an MP3 player anymore? Home theater and all that jazz. Mostly cell phones these days. I guess we talk a lot about Windows 8, too. Got a Windows 8 tablet, the Windows RT Surface tablet in front of me. We could talk about that. And, of course, Chris Marquardt coming up at half past noon. Well, I guess that's not accurate since you listen all over the country, don't you? And, in fact, all over the world. In the second half of the second hour, whatever that might be to you, I'm a little jet-lagged because I got back from Australia, a trip to Australia a few days ago. And I'm still a little bit on Australian time, which right now is 6 a.m. tomorrow. So it's Monday. Happy. it's not as bad as I thought it would be, the jet lag. Not too bad. 8888 Ask Leo is my number. If you want to call and ask a question, make a comment, make a suggestion, 888-827-5536. Somebody tweeted me. Yeah, you can tweet me as well if you wish. My Twitter handle is at Leo Laporte. LEOLAPORTE. Easy to remember. And Chris Spalding tweeted me yesterday saying, I wonder if you've commented on the news about the United Nations taking control of the internet. Whoa. although maybe that's not such a bad idea. The internet is an interesting and tricky body. Some people may say, well, we invented it. We should, the U.S., we invented some of it. We invented the underlying protocols, TCPIP. In fact, it was the federal government through the Defense Advanced Research Projects Initiative that funded the initial development of the internet. The Defense Department thought it would be a good idea to have a way for computers with different operating systems to talk to each other. Seems like a good idea. So they funded the initial stuff. The National Science Foundation, also through government funding, funded it. But in the mid-90s, the NSF stopped funding it. And really the thing that most of us think of as the internet, the World Wide Web, was invented by a British scientist working in Switzerland, using American computers, the next computer. So it's really an international thing and certainly used worldwide. But don't get all head up about the stories that the United Nations might take control of the internet, because that apparently is not exactly what's going on.
Michael Geist, who is a Canadian and an expert on internet law, really one of the most trustworthy commentators because he's a lawyer and understands his stuff, says that's not really the issue. The problem is, of course, the internet is regulated in many ways by the International Telecommunications Union, which is a United Nations agency. It actually goes back to 1865 when it was created to regulate the international use of the telegraph. Wow. The ITU will be meeting next week in Dubai for the World Conference on International Telecommunications. But countries like Russia, apparently, are looking to press the ITU for greater control over the internet. See, other countries don't really like it that the United States, and particularly the U.S. Commerce Department, seems to have a lot to do with the internet. And so these countries would like to increase their leverage. Some want it to be internationally regulated. The truth is, there's no good way to internationally regulate or nationally regulate the internet. It is a unique and wonderful system. Geist writes, the focus on a UN takeover of the internet has obscured the real concern with this meeting. Efforts by telecom companies, not nations, but telecom companies, to change the way we pay for the internet. Some telecom countries and developing countries with government-backed monopoly providers would like to change the way the internet works to a new model called sender pay. This is something even our own telecom, this is complicated, I understand, and I apologize if it's a little too much, but especially for for the weekend and all, but it is important that we understand this and not misunderstand or misconstrue or worry about something that's not an issue and ignore the real issue, which is this is something AT&T has been demanding for a while, that Google should pay to access you. See, right now, the way the internet works, you pay an internet service provider for your access to this superhighway where the information is flowing back and forth. You get kind of an on-ramp, a feeder to the superhighway. You pay for that. And then, of course, the superhighway is run by different companies. In the U.S., it's run by the big telecoms, actually. Sprint, the backbone, we call it, is run by Sprint and AT&T and Verizon and others. There are other companies involved as well. And then of course, companies like Google and YouTube and Netflix put traffic on the superhighway. They pay as well for their access to the superhighway. They pay for their on-ramp just like you do. So we're all paying to get on the on-ramp. And the money trickles down to Sprint and AT&T and the backbone providers because they get payments from the you know, it's kind of like a little fish, big fish, big fish, big fish, bigger fish, biggest fish. The money trickles up to the backbone providers. They get paid, believe me, they're not doing this for free. But they'd like to double dip. They'd like to not only charge people for the on-ramp, they'd like to charge people for access to their customers. And believe me, you don't want that. You don't want AT&T saying to Google, well, if you want access to Leo, if you want Leo to be able to watch YouTube videos or Netflix videos, you're going to have to pay us for access to him, not just for access to the backbone, to the superhighway, but for access to specific people. And what this creates, and this is the real fear, is an internet that is not open and free and fair, but that some providers, people who can afford to pay for this access, have better access to you than others. That you have better, because Netflix, let's use Netflix as an example, and they're a good example. They're the one that's using a lot of bandwidth right now. 40% of all primetime bandwidth is people watching movies on Netflix. 40%! So not only does Netflix pay their providers, Level 2 and the others who provide access to the freeway, but AT&T, who's your internet service provider? Comcast? Comcast wants them to pay extra to access you. And if they don't, well, maybe it won't be so easy to watch YouTube because they didn't pay the money. Now, I'm not too worried about YouTube. YouTube's got money. They can afford it. Google can afford it. No problem. But, you know, I also stream over the internet. I provide podcasts. This show you can get it as a free download. I provide streaming video of shows all around the clock. In fact, we've really created a little internet television station. And believe me, we couldn't afford to pay to get to you. That's the cable TV model. That's how cable TV works. We can't do that. It wouldn't be economical. And that, Michael Geist is saying, is the thing to worry about. Not only are these groups, that's called the, one of them is the European Telecommunications Network Operators Association, 41 telecoms out of Europe, ETNO. Not only does ETNO want this new sender pay model, but they also want new rules for the internet quality of service rules that are kind of like the old telephone system. And again, with threatened net neutrality. It's all about, this is the phrase you might hear time and time again, net neutrality, the idea of keeping the internet equal to all providers. And that's what's at risk. So that's what we'll be paying attention to next week. But enough of that. You call me, I'll talk to you. Leo Laborde, the tech guy.
When you're on the net, you will stay, cause the whole Google Earth is just one click away.
Wow!
When you're on the net, why would you go outside? Why be out in the world? You could be worldwide. I'm so out of shape.
Yeah.
I'm gonna buy a Moo Moo. The skateboard escape from Back to the Future 2.
Bring back Leonard Bernstein. We gotta rewrite the West Side Story. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I like that. Kyle Benham, my musical director. I don't know where you get these. Don't know where you get these. We'll talk about John McAfee at some point today, because that's a crazy story. He's the no longer associated with McAfee antivirus, but he was the creator of the McAfee antivirus. Had a checkered career before that anyway. And now he's being accused of murder in Belize. He says it's all a plot. Which it might be, by the way, because apparently this is some have said is a racket that the Belize police. Belize is an interesting country anyway. Former, what is it, British Honduras? We kind of CIA had a lot to do with the government there. They overthrew the democratic government of Honduras because the United Fruit Company was worried that they would nationalize the banana plantations. They want to make sure that there was somebody in power there who would protect their interests in Belize. I'm not sure why McAfee's living there. I'm sure it's inexpensive. But it's a twisted story. He told the New York Times in 2009 that he, even though he had a $100 million fortune, he lost it all in the financial crisis, or almost all. Interesting fellow. Maybe we'll read some excerpts from his blog, The Hinterland. Whoismcafee.com a little later on. I think perhaps a dramatic reading would be appropriate at some point. It's not really a tech story, except that, you know, his name, he's like Peter Norton, who, you know, these were early pioneers in the tech industry. Peter Norton and John McAfee sold, you know, early and collected the money, but their names are still being used because they're brands now. Is Peter Norton still on the boxes of the Norton antivirus with his arms folded and the big wide tie? You know, the picture you could tell was taken in 1978 because his tie is like halfway across. It's a little dated. Maybe they've used a little Photoshop on the tie now. Peter Norton took the money and became a very well-known art collector and philanthropist. I'm not sure what's going on with John McAfee. Crazy. Crazy. 8888, but it's not really a tech story, so we'll put it off. 8888 Ask Leo. In fact, we've got lots of calls, so let's go right to the phones. I remind you that the phone number and the chat room link and all the show notes are always online, tech 24/7, techguylabs.com. That's my website. Someday people will say, there's Leo's crazy blog, techguylabs.com. Leo really went off the deep end in 2015, and... Susanna, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Susanna.
Leo?
Hey.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Uh-oh, I can't hear you.
You can't hear me. You know, there's some technical difficulty going on here that we've had problems.
I got you.
Hear me now? Okay, good.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
Yay. Okay. You're the greatest.
Thank you.
Okay, so I have a Samsung Galaxy S3 brand new.
Yay. Was that a Black Friday purchase?
No, I've had it about a month.
Okay. Because now, you know, they've dropped the price a little bit on those.
But I think I did a bad thing and I didn't get insurance.
Uh-oh, did you drop it?
And so now the phone, three times in 1 week, the screen goes black. It just shuts off while I'm in a call.
Yeah, it's rebooting. So this is not uncommon with smartphones. It's a bad one. But you know what? It's brand new. You take it back and you say, hey, this is broken. And they'll give you a new one. This is not uncommon. In fact, they're totally used to this.
Okay.
So it's under warranty. You didn't need the extended warranty. Extended warranty really only takes effect after the manufacturer warranty runs out. And you're still in effect.
Okay.
So they'll replace
it. Even though I didn't get insurance?
No, yeah. So understand that the extended warranty, the so-called insurance, covers... extends the warranty. So you have the full warranty period, then you add more after that, or if you drop it or something. But you know what? This is not unusual, particularly with Android phones. This is just random rebooting. It means there's something wrong with the phone. Who'd you get it from?
Verizon.
Yeah, just go bring it to the Verizon store and say, dude, it's reboot. Just tell them this. It's randomly rebooting in calls. And he'll go, oh, gosh, you know, here's a new one.
Well, what it will do is I can't bring the screen back up.
Right, it's broken. It's broken. Don't worry about it. It doesn't matter what it'll do. It's broken. It's not supposed to do that. So take it back, Susanna.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
And the extended warranty, you don't need the extended warranty. It's under warranty still. It's only a month old.
Should I get insurance?
Well, you got to ask them what this insurance covers. So it depends. Like sometimes the insurance covers it. If you dropped it and the glass broke, then they'll replace it. But usually you got to look at the details. It's a lot of homework. Usually there's a big deductible and you can only do it once a year or whatever. And then sometimes it doesn't cover damage. There's no accidental damage. It just is extending the existing warranty. So what you need to find out is how long is this phone warrantied for? Usually it's a year. So so the insurance, the extended warranty doesn't take place even until after that year is up. It's essentially an insurance policy. You named it. It's exactly right. And it's just a question of whether you want to insure it or not. In this case, it's not a big deal because the phone is under warranty. So they'll replace it for free. They have to. It's broken. Right?
Have you ever heard of this problem before?
Yes, it's very common.
Okay.
So it's not a big deal. It's something they should immediately go, oh, yeah, sorry, you got the lemon. There's one in every batch, and it just you replace it because this is not unusual. These smartphones, I would say the smartphones, it seems to me, have more defects than, say, a computer. Well, computers always have defects. There's always some number of computers, some percentage. I don't know what it is, 0.1% or whatever. That's just our lemons. They're badly manufactured. Remember, they're cranking these guys out like crazy, and they don't test them. Used to be, back in the old days, when I was a young man, in '07, they would burn computers in. Do you remember this? If you're an old timer, you remember this. But this was when they sold, you know, a dozen computers a year. They'd build a computer, then they'd put it in a hot room and run it real hard, intentionally, hoping to make it fail. And if after 3 days of burning it didn't die, then they'd sell it. Those days are long gone. They have a big machine that goes, boom, jing, Galaxy S3, boom, jing, Galaxy S3. Put it in a box. Send it to Susanna. If it works, great. If it doesn't, no problem. Susanna will bring it back. That's how it works. Just take it back. It's broken. It's not your fault. It's broken. And they have to, by the way, replace it because it's under warranty. And rebooting during a phone call is not a desirable feature of any phone. So don't blame yourself, Susanna. It's not your fault. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, more right after this. Squeeze my lemon. What the heck we playing here? This is car. So I'm not sure. We're having some sort of weird. We've been having technical difficulties for how long have I been doing this show? It's so funny, you know. People say, "Well, you're the tech guy. You shouldn't have technical difficulties." And of course, that's exactly wrong. The tech guy is going to have more technical difficulties because we don't do things nice and easy. We like to do things nice and technical. And so we're always living on the cutting edge of technology. And so naturally, things will go wrong. But for some reason, I want to let you know, and if you're on the phone here on hold, we're going to bring you up. If you can't hear me, apparently my voice is fading out sometimes on these phone calls. If it fades out, go, Leo, I can't hear you. Let me know. Because I can't tell. Like Suzanne, it sounded like Suzanne couldn't hear me some of the time. The other thing, Suzanne, besides bringing back the phone, because you should, the chat room saying, oh, well, wait a minute, Leo, maybe she could fix it by doing a factory reboot, restall, reset, and that. Maybe you could. It is possible. If you go to the settings menu, you could do a factory reset. But I wouldn't. Generally speaking, if a phone crashes in the middle of a phone call, that's not a good thing. That means something's wrong with it. And you should just bring it back and make them fix it. Why should you go through any extra effort? A phone should work. And don't put up with it if your phone isn't reliable. It needs to be reliable, right? Otherwise, how are you going to call me? 8888-ASK-LEO, Richard in Poway. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call. Once again, I need your great wisdom.
My wisdom.
A while back,
wow.
I purchased, rather than buy a Kindle, I purchased a Toshiba Thrive 32 gigabyte, which I could, of course, download books, and I get so much more accessibility. Well, it became so great to me that, all my travel, I leave my laptop home and just take my tablet with me.
Aren't tablets awesome?
And the reason I picked the Toshiba because it has three slots for the SD card, USB, and the USB Mini, I felt it so versatile.
Yeah.
Now my wife is getting jealous because she has a little Kindle and she's taking a laptop and a Kindle everywhere we travel. She wants a tablet. What should I get her?
Well, now tell me this, Toshiba, is it Android, Windows? What is on this tablet?
It's an Android 4.0.4.
Okay. Oh, the Thrive.
Yes, the Toshiba Thrive.
Thrive, yeah, okay.
E100.
I thought you said drive, and I thought, I don't know what a Toshiba drive.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's not your fault.
My ears, New York accent.
No, I love your accent. I love it, man. I grew up in New York. You're my people. So the Toshiba Thrive is a inexpensive, nice little tablet. And if you're happy with Android, and you sound like you are.
Yeah, I'm thrilled with it.
Yeah, and yours is a 7-inch. The best
10-inch.
Oh, you got the 10-inch Thrive. Okay. The best 7 and 10 inches out right now are the Google Nexus tablets, the Nexus 7
Google
and the Nexus.
Google Nexus?
Nexus, N-E-X-U-S.
She wants a 10-inch.
She wants a 10-inch, don't they all? Let me just see if Google is selling play.google.com.
Is that completely compatible with mine?
Yeah. In fact, it's a little more up-to-date than yours. You're running 4.0. That's ice cream sandwich. And
Okay.
No, don't feel bad. But they're up to Jelly Bean now.
Give that for Christmas. Give it mine for Christmas and keep.
Yeah, that's what I would do if you're a smart man. Now I don't think the Nexus 10 are they. Let me see if they're offering it yet, because they still are offering the Nexus 7.
The Google Nexus.
The Nexus is fabulous. In fact, I would look at the 7 because I know she wants a 10, but you might be amazed by.
She'd probably be happy with the 7.
Seven's a little smaller, and it's a little bit. I like it. I like it.
Okay.
And
also,
it ain't just the size, right? It's anyway. I don't want to get in trouble here, but you know what I'm saying. Wait a minute. They are selling the 10. So both of them are at play.google.com. Thank you to.
You keep cutting out, Leo, on the phone.
Aha, good. Well, that's good to know. We're having trouble with the phones. Thank you to iDroid 7. The Nexus 10 is available.
I'm still here.
Yeah, he can't hear me, see? So we're having that problem, Kyle. The engineering here is just really terrible. We'll figure it out. $399 for 16 gigabytes on the Nexus 10. It's hard to say. The Nexus 10 is kind of amazing. For one thing, it's super high resolution. The Nexus 10 resolution is the highest. It's higher than an iPad. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to put Richard on hold. I don't really need callers. I'll just talk for the next 3 hours. Why don't we? You can't listen to the radio because we're on delay. We're on a 40-second delay. So if you listen to the radio, you ask me a question, you won't get your answer for almost a minute. Now, I personally, given the choice, probably recommend for most people recommend iPads. But since you're already in the Android camp, Richard, and you are happy with it, and you will be able to support your wife, and of course you've already got the apps and everything. I think a Nexus would be a great choice, either the 7 or the 10. The 7's cheap; it's $200. That's what I have. I haven't played with the 10 yet. I'm very intrigued by the 10 because Google has decided to really up the ante on this computer. It is 2560 by 1600. It is the highest, it's 4 megapixels, the highest resolution of any tablet made that I know of, certainly much higher than the Retina display that Apple makes in the same size. That's amazing. 25, I can't even believe it. A 10-inch screen at 2560 by 1600. Now, that's a lot of pixels to move. They'd have to have a very fast, this is one of the issues I'm looking forward to reviewing one because I want to make sure it's snappy. Remember when Apple decided to ship a Retina display for the iPad 3. It was a little sluggish because that's so many pixels you're moving that you need to have a very, very fast graphics subsystem. I presume that Google's responded to this. Wi-Fi only, 16 gigabytes, Nexus 10 is $399. So it's not cheap. Web2797 says he's used one, and it's not snappy. It drops frames, and that worries me. But on the other hand, Phronic, also in our chat room, says mine's very fast, so I don't know. I think the Nexus 7 is really the sweet spot. It's a great price. 7 inches is a nice size for a tablet. It's a little more portable. I like it. All right, Kyle, I'm going to take my chances here and go to the spooky line 3 and say hello to Shell in Temecula. Hi, Shell.
Hello?
Hey, can you hear me? Not at all. Okay, I'm going to try one more time. Let's try line 4. Scott, Springfield. I'll get to you, Shell, in a bit as soon as we figure this out. Springfield, PA. Scott, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. Tell me if I fade out, Scott. Thank you.
So far, you sound good.
Okay.
I just got a new computer for my wife.
Okay.
And that frees up a 8-year-old Pentium 4 at 2 gigahertz that we want to have.
And freed up as it should be, I think.
Well, we want to let our toddler play with it.
Oh, perfect. That's good.
So I'm wondering, is that a candidate for Shubuntu or regular Ubuntu?
Probably not regular Ubuntu. Pentium 4 is a little bit old. How much RAM? How much RAM is on there?
Almost a gig.
Okay. There are a number of Linuxes designed for lower, slower machines. A gig is actually good. If you've got almost a gig of RAM, most Linuxes will run just fine. Xubuntu, that's the one you were talking about. Shubuntu is a good choice, Scott. That's the one I'd start with. Or maybe Puppy Linux, which is also designed to be light and tight. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. Leo Laborde, the hip-hop tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Linux is a open source. That means it's free. Free in both senses. Free as in doesn't cost you anything, and free as in not constrained by proprietary patents or ownership. No one owns Linux. As a result, Linux often, isn't constrained by the same commercial requirements modern operating systems are. For instance, you can get a Linux, free, that will run on older hardware. You can't get a version of Windows that will run on older hardware. I mean, they have it, but it's not commercially viable to keep to maintain it. Linux is maintained by volunteers, many of whom have older hardware. So they say, well, hey, we want to keep our Pentium 4s running. And what's great is there are some older machines that would just, it's like getting a new machine. You're going to erase the hard drive completely. I would say, Puppy Linux is a good one to look at. I think that Shubuntu or Xubuntu is I don't know if it's still being developed. I got the feeling it might not be. Puppy is actively in development. And you know, you can get it not only you get it free, but you can put Open Office on it, which is a Microsoft Office compatible suite of programs free. And if you have Puppy Linux, it's 100 megabytes on your hard drive. And Open Office and Puppy Linux is 256 megabytes. It's a tiny, so it'll run at a small drive. And it also doesn't have huge RAM requirements. So I think Puppy Linux is a very good choice, not just really for slow and old machines, but even for modern machines. So, and that you can find at Puppy Linux, L-I-N-U-X is Linux.org, puppylinux.org. Linux is really, to me, more and more interesting as a desktop. Many of you, well, we all use Linux. You know that, right? We use it all the time. Many smart televisions run on Linux. My smart TV has Linux in it as the operating system because it's free. The internet runs on Linux. Many of the websites you visit, including all of ours, including Tech Guy Labs, run on servers running Linux. Not at all unusual. More than half the internet, I'm sure, is running on Linux. So you use it every day, but you may not. You may say, "Well, why do I want to replace Windows or Mac OS with Linux?" You might, and I think as Mac OS and Linux and Windows become more proprietary, more our way or the highway, more dictatorial, that it's maybe more people are going to look at open systems, free systems like Linux. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Shall I take a chance, a wild chance? You know, I could. It's not hard for me to monologue for 3 hours. Just ask my ex-wife. I can do that. But I do like phone calls. I really do, because then I know what to talk about. Let's try it. Let's take a wild chance. Josh, Dana Point, California. Hi, Josh. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. If by chance I happen to lose you, I'll just check the show notes. That way you can monologue as long as you
want.
Yeah,
or listen, take the answer on the air. I think sometimes that's probably the easiest.
There you go. Can you still hear me all right?
I can hear you. I can hear everybody. It's not that. Apparently, it's they can't hear me.
Okay. Well, my question is basically this. I've settled on a TV, finally, moving up from an old rear projection Toshiba. I've settled on the Panasonic 50-inch plasma, the ST version.
Yeah, so there's three levels, ST, VT, and GT. And I actually... It's funny that you should ask, because I just bought the a VT, the middle level.
Oh, okay.
Love it!
Yeah, I've heard good things, and so the only thing is I'm very ignorant when it comes to all of the accessories that go along with plasma TVs now, one of them being Roku versus right. Apple TV versus...
I wouldn't buy anything yet, because the Vieiras, okay, these new Panasonics, have very good smart apps. In fact, that's... Besides the fact that it's a very good panel, Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, recommended that I look at the GT, the top of the line, which means that I took the one lower because I know Scott's got better eyes than I do. So, and I think the ST is probably fine too. But you might look at the difference between the ST and the VT. I know it's not a huge price jump, but the thing, and it may be that this is the difference. I don't know.
Okay.
At least on my VT, the smart apps are fantastic. It's got Hulu, Amazon, Netflix, and a huge range of others you can install, even games. And it's very nicely done. There's only one negative, and it's kind of a significant negative. And I just want to, when I go to CES and talk to the Panasonic guys, I'm just going to shake them and say, why? There's ads in the internet part of it. Yes, there's banner ads for like Capital One credit cards. And then they even show little videos up in the upper left-hand corner. Now, I'm adept at tuning it out. It's no worse than the web. And I guess that was their thinking. But heck, I paid $3,000 for this 65-inch TV. I shouldn't have to also watch ads on it in the software. But I guess they wanted to make a little extra, you know. But I've tried Samsung, I've tried LG, and I've tried Panasonic. And currently my favorite smart TV is the Panasonic. Wi-Fi and hardwired, which is great. Again, this feature set may vary between the GT, VT, and the ST. I'm not sure what the difference is.
I'll research in between all three.
Yeah.
I'll spend a little more time on that. Yeah. The only other question I guess I would have is, I know from what it seems like the speakers that are built into the TV are pretty...
You never want to use the built-in speakers if you can help it. They're not bad, by the way. They're as good as any television set. But in general, what you'd like to do is use a 5.1 or 7.1 surround sound.
Okay.
Now, I know that adds considerable expense. So don't, I would say, don't feel like you have to do it right now. Get the TV. The TV speakers are not bad. They fire out the back, which is a little weird. But, you know, it's funny because sometimes this TV, depending on what I'm doing, will revert to the speakers. And sometimes I don't even notice it for a while.
Okay.
It's not,
that makes sense.
I
figured just with the weekend and the Cyber Monday deals and all the other fun stuff, which I figured you'd probably talk about, that it may be worth trying to package everything together at this time to save a little bit on it or not. So.
Absolutely. I mean, you can get a decent 5.1 surround audio system for not too much. It has an additional advantage. The TV itself has four, I think, HDMI ports, maybe more. But if you get a video receiver, what they call an AV receiver, then you can use it as an AV, as a HDMI switcher, and you don't have to do that on the TV. Just the receiver handles that. You say, I'm going to watch cable today, and it comes through in the stereo with a subwoofer in the rear, and it just sounds wonderful. And almost anything you get, except maybe a sound bar, will sound better than the TV sound.
Yeah, I had assumed that the sound bars were probably not the way to go, at least not as of yet.
I'm not a big fan. You can get, at the same price, you can get a decent, at least stereo system. At the minimum, you want is a left-right speakers with a center channel. And not too expensive. Shop around. There are a lot of companies, Toshiba and others, that make very, very good, inexpensive.
Yeah.
Home theater in the box is usually what it's called.
Okay. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. I'll look through the models and see what I can do, and also see if there's something this weekend that can maybe package it together.
But I agree.
I appreciate this.
Yeah. This is a good time to be shopping for a TV. Absolutely. You know, it's a little scary, but Panasonic, Pioneer, I guess Pioneer's even out of the business now, Sharp, Sony, the Japanese TV manufacturers are struggling. And I suspect this will trickle down to the Korean TV manufacturers, Samsung and LG as well. Because I think they've saturated the market. There are not as many people, Josh, as there used to be, who are upgrading to big screen TVs. Boy, they're great. They're really. I've been very, very happy with the picture. Is just stunning. And somebody in the chat room, Web4872, is saying, now, what about ambient light? Because one of the things we've said all along. People often say, well, plasma or LCD. And my stock answer was, well, in a brightly lit room, you want LCD because they're brighter. Plasma is better for a room that you can darken in a home theater situation. And actually, I haven't had that problem with the Panasonic because it has a bright setting for a bright room. It's not particularly glary, and I think it looks great. Now, I usually will draw the blinds if I can, but it doesn't get rid of all the ambient light, and it still looks great. I think plasma is, they're almost as thin now as LCD. They don't have the issue of not keeping up with the frame rate. They look great. I'm a big plasma fan. I really am. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Phone me, call me, let's talk. Website techguylabs.com. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by ShareFile. You know, I have said it for years, even when there was no good response, don't send attachments. And if you're in business, don't send attachments. People say, well, Leo, I got to send attachments. I'm in business. I got to send PowerPoint files or drawings or photos or whatever it is to my clients and colleagues. And how am I supposed to do that without sending attachments? And I still say, don't send attachments. Well, fortunately, there's a good alternative. Now, here's the problem with attachments. Here's why I say don't send attachments. Originally, it was because that was the way viruses got spread. Attachments seeming to be from clients or colleagues, people you already had in your address book, and attached, you got to read this, you got to see this, you won't believe what happened last night. You open it up and you got a virus. So that was the initial reason. But now it's also a problem with bounce backs. And frankly, many industries, you can't send attachments because they're not secure. You know that an email can be read. It's just like a postcard. It can be read along the way by anybody. So ShareFile solves that problem. It's designed by the fabulous folks at Citrix for businesses. I'm going to log into my ShareFile account here. And what's nice about ShareFile, by the way, if you're watching the video, you notice this is branded. So it's very professional. You know, have your company's logo. They customize it for different industries, so it'll always have the right. So I am always sending files to radio stations, for instance, voice tracks, recordings, things like that. So I have a share file. Now, this is nice. This is a folder, actually a couple of folders on my computer that are automatically synchronized with share file. So when I record audio, there's nothing here. Oh, that's right. This is I didn't have anything for Premiere this week. We'll go to the archives. When I record audio, I put it in the folder on my desktop, and it automatically goes to the share file folder where I can get to it, by the way, anywhere, anytime from the ShareFile apps, the free apps available for all the smart things. Now, here's the beauty of this. Now, somebody said, well, they're talking about a competing program. This is secure, and it does something very interesting. So there's an Outlook plugin. I'm not going to use that. I'm just going to click the file and say send the file. And you could either send an email directly from the ShareFile interface or give me a link. Now, here's where this is very different from the consumer-grade apps. Email me when the file's been downloaded. Require recipients to enter name and email before downloading. Downloads per users. You can also say when the download will expire. Oh, I didn't choose the files yet. That's why. Let's go back. And then it will give you a link. No, I did choose files. Let's see. Let's choose them all. See what happens. Give me a link. Download expires after one day. They can download it once, let's say. I mean, this is real control, right? Now send files, and I'm going to get a link. Now, this is really sweet. This is a secure link, notice, HTTPS, that I can now email to somebody. I can put it in an email. When they click that link, this is what they get. This is the interface. Very straightforward. They see the files. They can download individual files or all of them at once. They see ahead of time how big it's going to be. For your convenience, a zip file is created whenever you download multiple files. This is sweet. I want you to go to ShareFile.com and try it. Just give it a try. 30 days free. ShareFile.com. You're going to use our offer code TechGuy when you do this, if you will. So we will get credit for it. And indicate what industry you're in because they will absolutely customize it, and that makes it very nice. By the way, click the link that says radio listeners. Click here. It's up at the top of the page. I know this is a podcast, but that's the deal. Tech Guy. Oops. And then customize it. If you don't have to, but you can customize it for the industry you're in. You see all these industries. If you're in healthcare, it's HIPAA compliant. And this is awesome. ShareFile.com, promo code Tech Guy. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, Star Trek, 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you have a question or comment or suggestion. If you want to talk about the latest Doctor Who, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., Skype it in. That's fine. Skype out will work just great with a toll-free number, and it won't cost you a thing. 8888-ASK-LEO. The website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. There's a link to the chat room there, too. Lovely place, full of lovely, fascinating people. The kids in the back of the class. Let's go back to the phones here. I'm thinking Craig in Ontario will be next. Hi, Craig. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, how are you?
I'm well. How are you, Craig?
Not too bad. Question for you. I am looking at upgrading my TV, and I've kind of come to the decision that I'm not going to buy a TV that has apps on board because I'm going to put a smart or a set-top box on it anyways.
Right.
My question is, though, is with a lot of the TVs that aren't smart, they're the same model, but they come with fewer HDMI ports.
Right.
Are there HDMI splitters out there that are worth buying, or should I just hold out and buy a smart TV so I can have my four ports that I would need to hook up, like my Xbox, my Apple TV, and everything, as opposed to using a splitter?
I think in the long run, you're probably going to use a splitter of some kind. The best way to do it is an AV receiver as opposed to just a standalone splitter, because then you're going to get surround sound and everything else. So
how that would work is you'd have...
All of the AV receivers have multiple HDMI inputs in the back and one HDMI out, and that goes into the TV, and all you don't ever... The TV always stays on HDMI 1, and then you just use the receiver remote to change to the different sources. Now, there are... there are HDMI switchers. They're just fine. I had one from Geffen, G-E-F-E-N, but there are lots of companies that make these, and they work fine. They're a little bit of a pain because often you have to stand up, go across the room, and press the button. But you're... That's not going to work. there are some... The one I had supposedly auto-sensed where the signal was coming from and never seemed to do that properly. So, but yeah, absolutely. You can... There's no problem using an HDMI switcher.
Is there one of the digital receivers you would recommend that's sort of reasonably priced?
Yeah. I think the Onkyo, O-N-K-Y-O. I have two. I have one that's from Onkyo and one from Denon. Both are excellent brands. What you might be looking for, though, is an HTIB, a home theater in a box. That gives you the speakers, a AV receiver, often with a built-in Blu-ray DVD player as well. Kind of all the components that you need besides the TV. And there are a lot of good HTIBs out there as well. Onkyo is a great brand all around. I certainly wouldn't hesitate looking at Onkyo.
Okay, so there's no disadvantage really from me buying, I guess for lack of a better term, a dumb TV versus a smart...
Well, I think what happens is it's not just the apps that's missing, right? So what these guys do is they have... I was just talking about the Panasonic. It has three levels. And they have... And what you noticed is it's not just the apps. There's other capabilities that are missing, right? So the idea is they're going to want to bump you up to the next level for features. So extra HDMI ports, apps, maybe the capability of 3D, maybe a higher res, and maybe a higher quality panel. In some cases, the lower-end TVs don't have the same kind of upscaling capabilities. It's a little bit tricky, frankly, because... You may outboard some of those capabilities, like upscaling and apps, so you don't care if the TV has it. So it's one of those things where really you'd have to do some research.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Sure, you're welcome. Yeah, I have no interest in 3D TV, as you all know, but I bought a TV that has 3D, not because I wanted it, but because that level for that quality screen and the other features came with 3D. It's interesting. Did not come with glasses, which would have added to the price. And I think what that tells me is the manufacturers know that many people don't want 3D. So they leave the glasses out. If you really want it, you can buy glasses. It's a capability that they don't really care about. So that's really the game that the manufacturers play. They have... This is true of everything, isn't it? They have different levels, and the feature set... It's not just one or two features that are improved in each level. It's a number of them. Apps in a TV in general, I wouldn't worry about, because you're absolutely right. Roku, Apple TV, and others, in fact, your Blu-ray player probably, add apps as well. My Denon and Onkyo receivers both have apps. I don't recommend using apps on the receivers. They're usually too slow and not very good. But the Roku is great. The Apple TV is great. The biggest difference in Roku and Apple TV, these are little $100 boxes that you connect to the internet via Wi-Fi or Ethernet, and then they connect to your TV, so it's another source, and basically it's connecting your TV to internet television. The difference between the Roku and the Apple TV is just basically iTunes. Only Apple TVs let you do the iTunes stuff. So if you watch, buy, rent movies on iTunes, then you probably will want an Apple TV. It also, there's an additional feature if you use an iOS device like... an iPod, iPad, iPhone, iPod Touch, I guess, or a Mac laptop running Mountain Lion, you can use AirPlay to play the contents, the video or audio from those devices onto your TV using Apple TV. That's a nice feature, too. Apple TVs are designed for people who live in the Apple world. If you don't live in the Apple world, I think Roku is probably a better choice. Bill in Los Angeles. Hey, Bill, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking my call. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good. I'm afraid of a terribly mundane, not terribly exciting questions for men of your vast expertise, but I just need a bit of help here.
That's fine. You know, in fact, those are the best questions to ask, because often those are the ones other people say, oh, I can't ask him that. So
there's no question too stupid to ask, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay, well, this may be a little stupid. So anyway,
maybe you found that one question that's too stupid to ask.
That could be. If so, I'll grab the brass ring and the merry-go-round there.
Bill, thanks for taking a hit for the rest of us.
Okay, thank you. I'll appreciate that. Anyway, I've got old family movies dating back to the mid-'80s in VHS format, 8mm cassette format, and mini digital format. I still have the mini digital camera. I don't have the 8mm cassette camera. And I don't have the VHS camera or VHS player.
We just did this. We found 1930s film. That's how far back it went. I'll tell you what you should do. Really, the easiest thing when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte.
I just can't believe.
The tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. So we were talking to Bill in Los Angeles. Bill is like a lot of people. He's got video going back in time, different formats. And, of course, if you don't have the players, the idea of getting these into your computer is scary. So what I suggest, Bill, is going to a service bureau. This is what we did. We found my ex-wife found, because her mom passed recently. We miss you, Virginia. And she found film. Like 8mm film from the 30s, box after box after box, and we're just going crazy. What could be on this? But the film probably is keeping better, although it gets brittle, than the magnetic stuff you have, because it only takes 10 years or so before the Mylar backing starts shedding the ferrite, the magnetic material on the top, and this thing starts flaking. So these are
VHS format.
Yeah, VHS is they're going to go. VHS, any cassette that you used for a camcorder, they are not going to last much longer than 10 to 20 years. And time to transfer. If you want to keep them, it's time to transfer them. And I would just go to a service bureau, especially since you don't have those materials. They do a better job. The prices are surprisingly. I think we spent maybe $350 for 5 or 6 reels. It wasn't bad.
I'm going to guess 20-25 full.
You might have to do some triage. you may want to think about what you copy over, because of course a lot of that's not something you want to see.
Yeah. Well, my original thought was, Leo, was I just want to get it all in one spot, and as you know, maybe 10-15% is actually usable, viable. Right. Yes, I'm going to watch this video. And the rest of the camera parked in one spot for, 20 minutes a night.
Exactly. Recording the ground. It always happens to me. I get the record switched.
Will these service bureaus, can I get it back in an edited format, for example?
No, you'll get it back in is a DVD, which you can then put in your computer. What they're doing is the hard part, which is getting it to digital format. Once you get digital format, then editing is simple. They're not going to know what you want and don't want.
Yeah, yeah.
So they don't do that. Now, there are lots of companies that do this. There's probably one someone local that you could hand carry this to. I have used, and I like these guys. They're called Scan Cafe, scancafe.com. They do a very good job with both stills and video. And they do it en masse, they're pretty affordable. They also do a lot of cleanup. I think that they're probably worth looking at. But there may also be someone local that you can use. Scancafe.com. They're probably the best known. It's 20 cents per foot on film, $14.99 for a VHS tape. That is not bad. That is not bad.
Okay.
So I think that they're probably the most affordable. Lots of people think highly of them. The only negative is you're going to mail the stuff to them. And for a lot of people, they just say, I got to hand carry it. I want to see the person that's going to be working on this.
Well, can I ask what options do I have if I simply just want to do it myself and be parked in front of a computer all week?
Well, you'd have to buy things that can play that format back. You'd okay. It'd end up costing you more because you'd have to buy a VCR for the VHS tapes.
Yeah.
You'd have to buy the camcorder, and you may not even be able to find the camcorder.
Yeah.
So if you don't have the hardware to play it back, then there really is no question you're going to want to go with a service bureau, because one of the things the service bureaus do is they keep all of these and they keep them running. So you'd have to, you have a computer. If you have the device, at least for the ones that you still have the camera for, you'll need a video capture card. I recommend Pinnacle Systems sells some very inexpensive but very good stuff. Like the ADVC-110. Actually, it's not that inexpensive. It's a few $100. The ADVC.
I'm sure those Pinnacle Systems.
Pinnacle sells some. The ADVC-110. Who sells that now? I think that these things have been sold to other companies. Grass Valley sells it now. So Grass Valley, which is a very well-known name in video production. This is... we've actually used these for years for very high quality. It does use FireWire. So if you don't have FireWire on your computer, you're going to either want to get one that uses USB. I don't like USB because it's not as fast. So it has to compress it more in the device.
Okay.
So you might, then now you're going to want to get a FireWire card. Believe me.
Okay.
So once you investigate what it's going to take, you're going to go to Scan Cafe.
Okay, and just one last question. If I decided to do it on my own, do I need any special expertise on my part? Is there a level of expertise involved?
No. What you'll do is, let's say you have a VHS tape, you have a VCR. You put the VCR, has three plugs. It's got a yellow composite output and red and white for audio. You'll plug that into the capture device in the ADVC or whatever it is. You'll plug the ADVC into your computer. ADVC comes with software. You could use Windows Movie Maker. I'd like, for $75, Adobe Premiere Elements is a very good choice. You'll press record, you'll press play on the VCR, and you'll go take a break, and 2 hours later you'll come back. This all has to be done in real time. And then the computer has now recorded the VHS tape. Now you use Premiere Elements to scan through it and snip out the stuff you want. You could take individual files, and this is what I would do, of like different things, save those out to a folder. And Adobe Premiere Elements has the ability to burn to DVD, so you could burn it to a video DVD you could play back on your DVD player. That's probably a good idea. Okay. And you can keep it on your hard drive as well.
Or just go to the service bureau and here's my check. And thank you,
you see where I'm going here. $15 for a VHS tape. Let them do it. Now, what you'll get back from them is a DVD, which you can then put in your computer, rip, and edit.
And so I can edit that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, Stan, one last question real quick.
Sure.
I'm using Google Chrome, which you recommended, which is very nice. When I've got two Google browsers open, and I copy and paste something from a URL from one browser and into the body of a Yahoo letter in the other browser, it copies as text, not a hyperlink. Do you know why?
It's copying it properly. It's the issue is where you're pasting it is not automatically converting it to a hyperlink. It is just text. But if you're using an email program, and it's probably a setting in the program you're using, it has to say, I see http://. This must be a hyperlink. I will turn it blue and let the user click it. Is it an email program? Okay. What is the program you're pasting it in?
Yahoo.
It should do that automatically.
In Internet Explorer, it does. But in Chrome, it doesn't do it.
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know about that. I'm not sure why that would be.
You've been generous with your time, Leo. I'll figure it out. So,
if you copy paste, I'm looking at the chat room because these guys use every possible thing. They're saying you need to drag the link, not copy and paste, and that will work. Try that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, our show today brought to you by the great folks at Ford Motor Company. I am a Ford fan. Drive my Mustang, my 2010 Mustang, but I'm getting ready. I just have the urge, the feel, the desire for that new 2013 Fusion, the Energy, which is a plug-in hybrid. This is great. Ford is moving ahead with the latest, greatest technology. One of the things this new 2013 Fusion has that I'm desperate to get Is it starting to move towards the car? You know, there's more. Here's the way. I asked Alan Mulally, when are you going to do self-driving cars? And he said, what we found, and he goes back, he was an engineer at Boeing, designed the 777 cockpit, many of the great Boeing cockpits. He said, what we found is you don't want to take the control out of the hands of the pilot. You want to give them more information. You want to give them assist. So what they're putting in is basically assistive controls that make you a better driver, like adaptive cruise control. I love this. When it's activated. Now, you know how you put your cruise control on and it maintains the speed. Of course, dumb old cruise control maintains the speed as you plow into the trunk in front of you. Not this. The adaptive cruise control has forward-looking radar built into the car. It scans the road ahead and slows the Fusion down when you get close to the slower traffic. It adapts the speed. It'll also warn you. There's a collision alert that'll let you know with flashing red lights on the windshield, so you really see it if you're getting too close. I mean, this is what you want. This is a car that gives you the information you need to be a better driver. They've also got lane keeping built in. This is available on the Ford Fusion as well. It uses a specially built camera on the front to monitor the lines. And if the car veers into a line or starts drifting over there, the system can alert the driver with a steering wheel vibration, as if you're hitting with those bot stots, this kind of computer bot stots. And then it will also apply pressure on the steering wheel to help the driver steer back. It helps you steer back into the proper lane position. I mean, this stuff is so cool. Lane keeping and adaptive cruise control, both available on the 2013 Fusion. And you can find out more at the website, Ford.com/technology. Ford really staying on top of the latest technology to improve your experience. This is what Ford is all about, and one of the reasons why I am proud to say I am a Ford driver and always will be. Ford.com/technology. This is basically, this is Alan, yeah, Alan Mulally. He is the best CEO in the U.S. right now, and I don't think he gets the credit for it. He turned that company around, and now, because he's a technologist from Boeing, he's an engineer, he's putting this kind of technology into the cars, and I just think this is so great. So cool. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt's our photo guy. An expert on digital photography joins us every week at this time to talk about photography. Hey, Chris.
Hello, how are you?
What a nice picture we're getting. Okay, first of all, it's amazing, because Chris is calling us via Skype from Germany. We're getting True. Skype video that looks fantastic.
It's all in the lighting.
Ah, you're a photographer, of course. Of course.
It is. Yeah, well, light is everything, right?
Right.
And the camera is a plain run-of-the-mill Logitech camera, C910, I think.
Yeah, I like the C910. That's actually a great camera.
This is pretty much the room light here. And what I've done is I'm using this little app called Webcam Settings that allows me to change the white balance and the contrast. And so I do little tweaks and make it look as nice as possible.
It looks really good. So today,
I'm happy. Yeah.
Today we're reviewing our assignment. Now every month, Chris gives us an assignment. It's not a competition. It's not there's no prizes here. It's just to get you to go out and take pictures, frankly. And every month there's a new assignment. When you get the assignment, you should just go take pictures. Got to be new ones. Then upload them to Flickr and add them to the Tech Guy group. In this case, we were looking for pictures of what? Autumn?
The current assignment was weather.
Weather, that's right. Because it was in the wake of Hurricane Sandy. We thought, well, there's going to be a lot of chance to take pictures of weather.
Right. By the way, I sent you two mails with the links, because after that, I sent you that first mail, someone removed their picture. So,
oh, no. You picked a picture and they pulled it?
Yes, they did.
Oh, man.
So make sure you're looking at the second mail with the links in it.
All right. So, let's review. Now, this is, I know, a little bit of a strange concept. We're going to review the pictures on the radio.
Well, it has worked in the past. I've done a podcast over 7 years about photography. It's just audio, so
we've managed somehow to do it. So let's take a look at some of our pictures, starting with Burnside's Bridge.
Yes, Burnside's Bridge by Brent Spitaler, I think that's the name. I just like the way this is a very reduced picture. It's very clear what this is about. It's a black and white picture. It's foggy, so you have a fairly low contrast, at least in the top half of the picture. And then there's this bridge over water. It's a It's a stone bridge, and I like the way this bridge is the subject. It's so clear what this picture is about. There are the trees on the left and right kind of framing that bridge, so they're giving it a good place to sit in the image. And then there are a few reflections that have some interest. And weather, the topic, the theme just comes through. This is about weather. This is about a hazy fall day, sometime in the morning probably. So you get a very good sense of what the weather's like.
There's also some history here. This is from a very famous Civil War battlefield, Antietam.
So, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So this is a really, and I like the choice of black and white. When you have fog and then the stark treeless, leafless trees kind of standing up like fingers, it's just something about this picture. I agree with you. I love this. Very beautiful. Thank you. Yep. Thank you for sending that along, Brent. Burnside's Bridge.
So the next one is called Weather, very fitting, by C. Anderson 2016. And the reason I've chose this one is because it gives you the... Remember a few weeks ago when we did some debunking of photo myths, and there was one about lens flare? This picture is pretty much almost nothing but lens flare, right? You have the sun. It's apparently very hot. There's a lot of sun. And then there's this lens flare that gives you kind of an idea that there's some glass involved and the lens involved, and the direction of the light is adds some directionality. And it adds dirt to the picture, but it helps to convey that, oh, the sun is burning, right? It's sometime around noon. It's very hot. And the lens flare really helps bring that message through.
He took this using a Vivicam. I don't even know what a Vivicam is.
I don't know either.
Yeah. It's an inexpensive Vivitar camera. But that just shows you, you don't have to, you know, it's a point-and-shoot camera. You don't have to have a great camera. And you even may have a picture that some say is defective because of the lens flare, you know. That's all the people were complaining about the iPhone 5. It has lens flare. And this is just showing you, you know, that it's not a defect. This is an expressive photo.
Oh, it totally is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, C. Anderson. And thank you, Chris Marquardt. Now, we need
a third one by Frank Burley.
Oh, now I don't know if I have that one. All right.
We do three pictures. Check your mail. Again, you have two mails from me. So it's called It's All Gone by Frank Burley.
Okay.
It's one of those multi-layered images that I really love, because what you see is you see a picture of a tree in front of the sky, but the tree's upside down, and then you realize it's in a puddle. So what you're actually looking at is the pavement, and then there are leaves off that tree in the water. So you have the layer of the pavement, you have the layer of the trees, you have those leaves swimming on the water, but they are somehow related and connected to those trees. So the whole thing in total gives you that multi-layered appearance, and it is very weather related, right? It has to do with, it's probably been raining there. And then there is this nice framing. So what you see is the puddle in the asphalt actually frames those trees, and it makes a really good job doing that.
And then he put some filter on it that gives it kind of a chewed up frame around it, which I like too.
Yeah, that's...
You don't like that.
I'm not, it's okay, but I'm not even looking at that. I'm just looking at the picture itself. So that's one of those pictures that are hard to mess up with any filters.
It's a great picture.
Much.
I love, I notice a lot of pros like to take pictures with reflections.
Yes. Oh, reflections just add this additional layer, adds a mystery. They let you tell stories in a whole different way. So I typically want to go out when it's raining, because then that's when I get the best pictures. That's when I get really interesting stuff.
Yeah. I don't think you're going to get reflections in our next assignment.
No.
Maybe.
Maybe
if you're really innovative.
It's true. The next assignment, I've looked at the weather, and it's getting dark really early nowadays up here. So darkness. Let's do darkness as the next assignment. The light is awesome in photography, but sometimes if you add darkness, if you take light away, that'll help you guide the eye to different areas of the picture much, much better. Light guides your eye. So darkness, don't send in a black picture, please, but...
well, you can send it in. We won't pick it.
I won't pick it, right.
All right. You got a month, 4 weeks. And you know what? Go out every week because you can upload a new picture every week. So you can get as many as four pictures submitted to the Tech Guy pool. It's on Flickr, which is free, FLICKR.com. It's a Yahoo property. So if you already have a Yahoo account of any kind, you have a Flickr account. If not, it's free to create one. Upload the picture. Tag it, please, with darkness so we'll know. And then add it to the Tech Guy group. Just search for groups. And in the groups menu and search for Tech Guy, two words, you'll find it. It's easy. Darkness. Chris is always great. ChrisMarquardt.com. If you want to know more about Chris, he does workshops. He's a great photographer. Are you going to Everest again?
We're going to Everest in May. We're going to take a small group of photographers to Tibet, actually, to Mount Kailash, the
wow.
holiest mountain for the Hindus and the Buddhists. And we're going to do a circumambulation of that mountain. It's beautiful.
It's a circumambulation.
We'll pretty much walk around it as the locals do, and we'll have yaks to carry the heavy bags and stuff, and
Excellent.
We'll be doing awesome photography, I'm pretty sure.
Thank you, Chris. Great to talk to you. ChrisMarquardt.com.
Totally.
We'll put links in the show notes to all three pictures, so you can always go look to techguylabs.com and see the images that we were talking about. Thanks, Chris. Take care.
Absolutely.
Let's get back to the phones. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Number is 8888. Ask Leo. We'll go to your call next. Stay right here. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's our phone number. I think we got the phones working. Whatever it is you did, whatever magic you worked, Kyle Benham, everybody seems to be able to hear me. That's nice. 888-827-5536. That's the phone number. If you've got a question about technology of any kind, I'm here to help. That's my calling. You call me, that's my calling for you. We didn't talk to Shell. Shell in Temecula. Another call from Temecula. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Shell.
Here, I'll hit it.
Oh, this was a magic line three. That's right. Shell's been hanging on. Now, can you hear me now, Shell?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, we fixed it. Yay.
Oh, good. Thanks. I have a question about the home theater projectors, and I want to get a projector to watch movies in my backyard.
Oh, great idea.
And I looked a little bit online, and I found prices ranging from $300 to $30,000.
Yes, that's right.
If I get something from, like, you know, for $300-$400, do you think I would be happy with that?
Or no.
Would that be really...
No. Yeah. The $300 or $400 ones are really low res or low lumens. They're not very bright. Now, of course, if it's in the backyard and it's pretty dark and you don't really... And you're showing this to small children, it might be all right. But I think you might want to spend a little bit more...
Well, what do you recommend?
You want to get a projector that is designed for home theater. You know, there's lots of, and especially the inexpensive ones are designed for PowerPoint presentations in a boardroom. And you want one that has an HDMI input and all of that stuff. My favorite, and the one I use at home, I do this at home and I love it, is the Epson Home Cinema. And they have a variety of prices. But they just, I think, really look great. They even have 3D. I don't know if you care about 3D. That's going to probably add a little bit.
I don't think 3D is something I would really care for.
You know, you maybe look at the for $699 list, which means you can get it for less. Look at the Megaplex 50. Now they call it the Megaplex because it has built-in speakers, so that saves for backyard performances. That's great. You can also, it has a dock for your iPhone or your iPad. So if you want to put movies on the iPhone or iPad, you could play it directly from them into the Megaplex.
I was thinking maybe hooking it up to my Roku and, you know, just streaming videos.
You could do that. It has HDMI in, yep. Anything with HDMI in will do that. Now, this for $699 list, which means it's probably about $500, you know, on Amazon. You're only going to get 540p. It's enhanced definition. It's not high def. It's going to cost you $100 more for the high def version. But you may not care. It really depends. For instance, Roku, I think 540p is probably fine. especially since it's going to be on a big screen. Remember, there's cost, too, with the screen.
Right. Can't you sort of make that pretty inexpensively yourself, though, for the screen?
Again, it doesn't. It depends on how finicky you are. You could hang a bed sheet. Absolutely. and, I think in a lot of cases, if you're in the backyard, it's kind of drive-in movie time, that's fine.
Okay.
Actually, I'm looking now. Epson's charging $399, $400 for this MG50 on its site, which means you can probably get it for even less. So this is a relatively inexpensive, gives you good results, 540p. The built-in speakers simplify things. You could actually just, bring a plug out in the Roku and hang a sheet, and you've got a drive-in.
Okay, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
I mean, it really, you can spend so much, as you said, 30s, you could spend more than 30, you could spend 50 or 100,000, but that's for higher quality people, who want real hot 1080p high def, that kind of thing.
This is not going to be like a main way of consuming movies.
Right.
It's more like once in a while.
Perfect.
Right,
I think the Megaplex is perfect. That's what it's designed for. It's bright. It's 2200 lumens, which is really quite bright. It is three LCDs, so it's good color reproduction. 540p isn't super high resolution, but I love the idea that you can connect a smartphone or a tablet to this. It's got the speakers built in. It's got the dock built in. I think for a lot of people, exactly as you described, this isn't your main home theater system. This is for fun in the backyard this summer. This is a great solution.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much, Leo.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. That's the Megaplex, and they have a variety of lines. And in fact, that's not the one I use. I use a higher-end Epson projector for in-home, and I bought a special screen and all of that. And you certainly can go fancier and fancier. And so it's just about your budget and your eyeballs. And if it's just for fun in the backyard, I think the Megaplex is that's what they designed it for, because it has built-in speakers, right? It's made for like you bring it to the backyard, you set it up, and you play movies from your iPhone or your iPad. Lisa's in Westminster. Hi, Lisa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. My Sony Ericsson W518A cell phone is not charging, and I'm looking at getting a new phone real soon, so I'm not eager to spend much on this. Now, there are a number of hacks I've heard of. I'd like to know what you think of any of these or any other ideas. One, the charger port seems to be either defective or loose.
How old is the phone, Lisa?
2010.
Lithium-ion batteries do have a limited number of times you can charge them. A couple of years is not...
It's not the battery. I did try a charger in a store where you put the battery into the charger, and that works just fine. I'm just not looking to invest in one of those. So I'm wondering if the problem is that the charger port is loose. Could I solder it in place? Would I have to use a solder that conducts, or would I use crazy glue or something? And where could I find the schematics for this?
Lisa, you can get a new phone for free that's as good as that Ericsson. I'm not sure why you would want to spend all that energy.
Yeah, well... For one thing, my information's in this phone. I just want to use it for a couple of weeks until I get the other phone, and I want to get my information out of this phone. Now, what would you think of taking an old Walmart charger, cutting off the end that plugs into the phone, strip the wires, attach the red wire to the positive, the black to the negative of the battery, put the battery back in the phone, and plug the charger?
No, you'll blow it up. You'll blow it up. Don't do that, whatever you do. Yes. You'll overcharge the battery and it'll explode.
I saw something like that with a USB cable on the internet, so that wouldn't work with a Walmart charger.
No, I wouldn't do that.
But it would work with a USB cable. I've seen
I don't think I would do that either. This sounds a little nerve-wracking to me. You've got to be careful with lithium-ion batteries. If you overcharge them, they will start to get very, very hot and eventually will explode.
Oh, what if the charger is the same kind that came with the unit, 5-volt output? That wouldn't work.
Can you take this phone apart? I mean, can you easily get to that connector?
To the charger port to solder it in place. No, I'm still trying to figure out what kind of screwdriver to get. The screws seem to be a little stripped down on the back of the phone.
I mean, I guess you could do it. Here's my warning, my caution to you. You got to be careful about charging lithium-ion batteries. If it starts to get hot, you actually have to monitor it. Normally, the charger that you use with it has circuitry to protect the battery. I think you probably can. I mean, it depends what's wrong with it. And it's hard to see unless you can open it up. And it's possible. You're right that the these things do happen. They, you know, over time, plugging in. It's got Liz. What kind of connector is it? Is it a USB charger or is it a special proprietary Sony connector?
It's a Sony Ericsson crazy thing with the two prongs that it can.
Oh, I hate those. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, that's highly proprietary, and that's a tricky thing to replace. I know what you're talking about.
The charger port itself is either loose or defective. I've been to a few places.
You know, I've had that happen. I've had that happen with those Sony phones. Those plugs are so terrible. That's why everybody got away from them. I threw it out.
Oh. Yeah.
But I understand you want to get your data off of that.
Is there any way to do that? What if the phone goes dead again? Is there any way to get my information out of the handset?
Well, you were able to bring it in, and they were able to charge the battery on a standalone charger. Maybe you can get them to do that one more time just so that you can get the data off of there. You can get a free phone. You know, nowadays, especially because of Black Friday, 99 cents for an iPhone 4 from AT&T, for instance. So phones are cheap. It's cheap to replace the handset. And that is a pretty old one. I would get away from that Sony Ericsson. So what you want to do is you want to get the data out of there. And then I would just go to the store and say, hey, give me a 99-cent phone, please. It sounds like a lot more work than it's worth to get this to solder it back into shape. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Ring Central. That's our phone system here. Let me get the Ring Central lower third up so you can get the information. RingCentral.com. There's also a phone number on the screen, 800-543-9980. What is Ring Central? Well, it's the number one cloud-based business phone system in the world. For good reason. It's what we use here at the Brick House Studios. And I have to say, I give credit to Russell all the time. Russell Tammany, our brilliant IT contracting engineer. When we first set this up, Russell did a lot of work here for the IT. He set up all the IT. And I actually said, Russell, I think we need to get a phone system. I have 25 employees. I think they need I can't make them use their cell phones anymore. And he said, well, I've used Ring Central for a number of clients. We're very happy with it. There's no setup fee, $20 per month per user. You don't get a PBX in the basement. You get more capability without any hardware at all. Zero startup cost, no PBX. But you get things like there's apps for all the smartphones so I can my staff can make phone calls from their smartphones billing us, you know, as a business call. It even the caller ID shows up as their business number. They can set up the business number to ring to their cell if they want. They can have voicemail sent to email, faxes sent to email. It goes on and on. It's really a nice system. Very easy to configure. And right now, when you set up Ring Central, you can do a 30-day risk-free trial when you use our offer code TWIT. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. I wish we'd had this deal. RingCentral.com, 800-543-9980, or visit RingCentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. 800-543-9980. When you call TWIT, this is... You'll be talking on a Ring Central system. We love it. Really do. No complaints or regrets whatsoever. Very, very happy. Hey, a good day to you. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, and all that jazz at 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere, in the United States. If you're outside the U.S., hey, use Skype out. It's free to call a toll-free number. Won't cost you a cent. Our website is techguylabs.com. And when I answer a question, we get the question and answer up there as quickly as possible, so you can go right to the website when you get home and click the links that I mentioned or reread my suggestions. And then a little later on, tomorrow or the next day, we'll get the video of the show up on YouTube. We'll put clips of that in the website so you can watch the question and answer or listen. And comment, too. I want you to be able to comment. So we have comments on there, and that means you can add your two cents. And oftentimes, those comments are more valuable than my answer. Get an expert in here who says, well, Leo, you said this, but really, the answer is that. So please, techguylabs.com, also a link there to the chat room, which is a great place to go if you want to join the fun with the kids in the back of the class. Gary in Claremont, California, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey,
hi,
Gary.
Leo.
Thanks for calling.
Pleasure to talk with you.
My pleasure, too.
I've got a problem with syncing my iPhone to iTunes, and I have a PC-based computer.
There's your problem and right there. iTunes and Windows. That's an unfelicitous combination. But yeah. Go on. Tell me what's happening.
Well, I plugged my phone in, and I've done it several times in the past, but this particular time it didn't want to do what I was asking it. I have when the summary screen comes up and I go to photos, I have two choices in the drop down. It's my pictures or folders. And I didn't want all my pictures on my phone, so I picked my folders. When I did, it looked like the Manila folders, not the typical one that you would find maybe in iTunes. So I selected a folder, and I wanted to select several folders. So I hit the shift control and all these things to make that happen, and it wouldn't allow me to do that, only one folder. And that's where my problem lies. I cannot get any more than one folder on my iPhone.
Okay, so I have no idea how to do this because I don't ever use iTunes on Windows. In fact, I no longer use iTunes because to sync my iPhones or iPads because you can do Wi-Fi sync now. So let me ask the chat room for help on this one, which is syncing photos on Windows. You're not using Picasa or some other program. You just want to do it using the file.
Yeah, I have Picasso, but I don't use it.
Okay. Chat room saying things like uninstall iTunes. iTunes doesn't work on Windows. but you have to. I mean, this is the way Apple sets it up. It says download the photos off the Windows iPhone interface and explore. I don't sync them. Yeah, see, I think hardly anybody's doing this syncing, I guess because it just doesn't work very well. You know, on the Mac, there's iPhoto, and it's very straightforward. In the iTunes, you see all the iPhoto albums. You can check individual albums. You could, you know, there's a variety of choices. You're right. I don't sync all my photos. I just want the most recent ones. But I'm afraid that we... I don't have any good answers here from the chat room either. So you're in your My Pictures folder, and it will only let you select one of the subfolders.
Correct.
Yeah, I think
I've never had the problem in the past. I've always been able to sync it, and I was afraid to actually sync my iPad to it, thinking the same thing was going to happen. When I do look at the summary page, I have all my photos under the photos heading, but I think, as you all know, you cannot view your photos from that screen. You have to, none of your photos show up, but it shows over 2,700 photographs.
It's so interesting. I think that nobody's using this. Yeah, I think nobody's trying to do this because everybody's given up that iTunes and photos on Windows, it just doesn't work very well. Some people say reinstall iTunes. That will restore the ability to click individual folders. That seems like a long way to... Huh?
Will I lose anything?
No. No.
Just
nothing.
Uninstall and reinstall.
Uninstall and reinstall. I mean, that's not too hard, but it doesn't seem like the best thing to do. Others are saying, you know, you could use Dropbox, for instance, and automatically select the photos you want to sync in Dropbox and then have Dropbox on your iPhone or iPad and then open those photos there. That's not ideal, but you could do it.
Is that an application?
Yeah, Dropbox is it's a service. It's a web service, dropbox.com. And what it will let you do, and you get, I think, 5 gigs for free, which probably is enough for the photos that you want. What it does is it lets you create a photo roll, which you can then sync. Now, wait a minute. Now, JX23 has given me some useful information. A support note from Apple, unable to sync photos in certain situations. But now you're not getting an alert, right? You just won't do it.
No alerts. No, it just looks like the manila kind of envelope that you would find in Windows based.
It sounds like it's not. Oh, you know, here's one possibility. It may be getting this information from Windows. You know, you can tell Windows this is a photo folder. So maybe go out into Windows Explorer. Don't do this in iTunes, but do it in Windows Explorer. Right-click on that folder and make sure that it's set to be a photo folder. It may be that that's confusing iTunes. If you're just seeing a plain Manila folder and not thumbnails, it may just be Windows is saying is not indicating properly to iTunes. Hey, by the way, this is a folder of photos, not just a Manila folder. So before you were able to,
if I go to my computer and I select on my photos or my pictures, it will come up with all the different photographs that are on the PC in several folders, depending on the date or the title that I apply to it.
Right.
So I can go to my pictures, but it only shows up on the PC-based format. And when I select those photos or that folder, I can only choose one folder. I cannot hit shift or control and select several folders. So it only wants to allow one folder to go on my iPhone.
Right. I'm not sure what the answer is, and the chat room doesn't seem to have any suggestions either.
This is the first.
Yeah, well, it's an unusual kind of a situation. I mean, as you say, it used to work, and all of a sudden it stopped working. I have to think it has something to do with the interaction between Windows and iTunes. Maybe uninstalling and reinstalling iTunes will get things reset. You want a shift click a variety of different folders so you can have this folder and this folder syncing, not just that one folder.
Yeah. Yes, but it won't allow me to do that.
All of a sudden.
Yeah. I mean, previously when I did this, I got a different screen. It was a iTunes based screen that allowed me to pick the folders.
Yeah, that's what puzzles me. It sounds like Windows and iTunes are not communicating properly. Which, what a surprise, what this folder is, and I'm not sure what the fix is. To be honest with you, I wish I had a better idea. I'm sorry, Gary. Not much help. Keep listening, though, because somebody will figure this out. And I have to say, I want to have more sympathy, but my experience with iTunes on Windows is so horrible. I just don't use it. You could use iCloud. There is an iCloud for Windows that will let you sync your photo stream. I just don't know. I mean, obviously, you could put all the folders you want in a single folder and just have that clicked. But you've got an organizational scheme. We don't want to overrule that. Oh, I'm sorry. Leo, that's the best I can do, Gary. Maybe the chat room or the web site will have some better answers later. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's just spooky. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, we got it. We got it. Amazing. The chat room, always a great source of information. DZ Sound Nirvana in the chat room has sent me to a forum posting in the Apple support communities. In iTunes, I clicked on iPhoto's icon. I'd like to synchronize multiple photo folders, but the selected folders option is grayed out. How can I access it to select multiple photo libraries? And the answer, which apparently worked, create a folder. Put all your pictures into folders inside this folder. Select, and this is the key, choose folder and choose a top-level folder for your photos. Then you could choose selected folders and tick folders inside the top-level folder above. In other words, Apple decided not to do it Windows way. I bet you what happened is that there was an iTunes upgrade, and our caller applied it, and it changed the way it works. So we'll put a link to this Apple discussion It seems like this worked, and lots of additional information. And I'll put that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. So thank you, DZ Sound Nirvana. Good find there. Moving on, thank goodness. Greg in Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Greg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Gosh, love your show. I had a stereo store back in the early 70s, and I've just watched this industry change from four tracks to eight tracks to cassette. Met Ted Nakanishi's son, you know.
Hell yeah.
Went to Macintosh Labs, and saw how they built those things. What great companies.
What was the name of your stereo store, Greg? Was it in Anchorage?
It was in Salt Lake City, downtown Salt Lake City. Bought it for $1, so you know the state it was in. It was called the House of Music.
Love it.
And it ended up being, there may still be a House of Music in San Francisco, because those are the guys that sold it to these fellas that ran into the ground, and then, of course, it couldn't be saved. But for 3 years, 4 years, it was a lot of fun. You know?
I would have loved to have done that in those days. I think that was where everything was happening. It was fascinating.
Oh, yeah, and it changed. In fact, I remember working on UNIVAC 1108 and got into computer programming. Noel Bushnell, I think the guy was the head of Atari, or that
yes.
guy, he was from that era, just a grade or two in front of me. You know, there were just some innovative thinking back then. Like the RCA, people probably don't know, we had the RCA player that had video on vinyl when it first came out.
I remember that. Wasn't that weird? That was sort of capacitance-based video system. Very strange. You know, I interviewed Nolan recently, just a few weeks ago, on our triangulation show, and he is still a great, interesting, very active guy. I think Nolan Bushnell is one of my favorite people still in Silicon Valley, still around. And
get Laser Player. Then the Pioneer Laser Player came out. And
right, Laser Discs. I had those.
Yeah, and I had one. My wife gave it away and sold it for whatever. Thinking it was Fiddler on the Roof, but on one side was Fiddler on the Roof, and they had misstamped it and put Emmanuel in Japanese on the other side.
Whoa! If I were a rich man, come here, baby. Wow, that's a very different movie.
exactly. It was fun. But anyhow,
I had a Laserdisc player. I loved it, and had a lot of discs. You know, it's an interesting format because the audio was analog on that thing, and uncompressed. Yep. So it actually had probably the best possible audio.
It did.
Yeah, but it wasn't high def video, so that it was just kind of obsolete at this point. And the play and the discs were huge.
You'll still get those audio files that will tell you that a Macintosh tube amplifier is better than a solid state.
Oh, yeah.
Because of square root, the way it's processed.
Yeah, yeah, amazing. Amazing. Well, anyway, what can I do for you?
Okay, I'll tell you.
Oh, here, look, we got some laser discs.
I went in there, you know, there's one of these Android phones. Went to the local provider. We have three up here. And I had gone in before and upped my gigabytes because I was starting to watch a few YouTube movies. Well, all of a sudden, I go in the time, it says, well, you've used 25 gigabytes. And up here, the plan goes to 20, and it's like $15 each gigabyte.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd gone to 5, and so I was 15 gigabytes higher already. So I said, well, can I change it for this month? They go, no, you've already used 25 for the month, so it won't make any sense. I said, well, when's the next change date? They go, like, the 16th of December. So you're telling me I used 25 gigabytes in 6 days? And I'm just wondering. They said, and there's, to them, it's like money. So they're happy.
Oh, yeah. They got you right where they want you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, of course, what really irritates me is Sprint will use these same lines. And people up here that have Sprint phones will get unlimited for $69 or something like that. You know, it's just a weird thing. Same everything. But I understand that. But is there an app that tells me, okay, you just viewed this many gigabytes. This is how much you use today or something.
What kind of phone? Is it an iPhone?
No, it's an Android. It's a Galaxy 2.
Okay. So I'm sure there is. You know, on the iPhone, there isn't because Apple doesn't give developers access to that kind of information. You know, Apple's very careful about what developers can and can't do. And I have to say that I'm very impressed with the way Android gives you information. Now, I don't know if your Galaxy S2 will have this. I'm looking at my Galaxy Note 2, which has Jelly Bean on it. And there's in the settings, and you should check, there's a data usage thing. I think this is something that happened fairly, maybe with 4.0. You probably don't have a late enough version. And it'll even show you what apps have used how much data. You can set the range of dates so that you can see, hey, in the last week, who used the most data and how much did it use? I think that's the kind of information you'd like. And that is something that is in Android now. But it may not be in the older version of Android. Somebody's recommending a program that is available on the Play Store called Data Usage Defender. Now, wait a minute. B352 says his Galaxy S2 has it. It's an ice cream sandwich feature. So as long as you've got the latest version, yeah, it's in ice cream sandwich. What version of Android are you running, Kevin?
Who knows? Four. Yeah. I'm old and can't change.
Right. So it's try and just take a look. Go to Settings, Data Usage. It's the third setting down. And see if it's there. And I think that'll give you as much information as you're looking for. And then if not, Data Usage Defender, which I haven't tried, but one of the chat room folks suggests as a way to keep an eye on what's going on. That's the nice thing about Android. Because it's open, developers have access to stuff like text messaging, data usage that you just don't get on the iPhone. Developers just can't access that. Only Apple can. So only Apple can offer that kind of information. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. More to come. Watchdog, there's another one from the Android store. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I have worked everywhere.
Oh, Emmanuel. You're fiddling around again. 8888-ASK-LEO. So I guess there is. I didn't know this. This is kind of cool. Chat room, once again, to the rescue. If you are on iOS, there is a data usage app that will measure data usage. Well, does it do it by application? Yeah, it says it. By application. Now, I really like what Android does, and I use this heavily when I was traveling because, of course, as you know, you spend a lot of money on data overseas, and Android was very helpful in monitoring what apps are using data and even the ability of to turn off background data usage, which I wish I had known because, unfortunately, I had one app, the Gallery app on my phone, that used half of my data allocation in the background. And it would have been nice to have known that I could turn that off, but I just discovered that, unfortunately, a little late. This portion of the Tech Guy Show brought to you by DSL Extreme, my internet service provider for high-speed internet at an amazing price. Call 866, the number 2, get net, to get DSL Extreme. Tim in San Gabriel, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Tim.
Here, I got him.
Okay, did I push through? Oh, I'm not connected. That's why. All right, let me try that again. Hi, Tim.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me now?
I do.
Okay, my question is, I wanted to listen to DVD movies on CDs at work.
Yeah, because then you don't have to watch the movie. You can just hear the audio track.
Yeah, right now I do it on cassettes, but it's kind of hard and it takes a long time to do, and finding cassette players is actually getting kind of hard.
Yeah, and you know, you just really what you want is a program that will extract audio from DVDs, like DVD Audio Extractor.
Okay.
DVDAE.com. And what it does is it's like a DVD ripper. You know, you can take DVDs, put them in your computer, and rip the video and audio, but instead it just rips the audio. Which makes it really easy to listen. It rips the audio.
Is that a free download, or do I have to buy the software?
There's a free 30-day trial. I'm not sure how much it is to buy. Let's check. It's probably not. How could it be expensive? $38.50. That's a little more than I'd like to see, but yeah, it's not free. There may be free open source solutions to this as well.
Thank you. I've been trying to find that for the longest time, but I could never find it.
Well, I knew about this for some time because you're not the only person ever to ask that question. However, S-Expert in our chat room says that VLC, which is free, will do this. If you go to videolan.org, you can download a copy of VLC, which is a video media player. And I guess when you load up the DVD, you can save out or extract just the audio. VLC is free, so that's not bad. And VLC, everybody should have a copy on Mac or PC because it's Linux. It's a great little tool to have, and it's absolutely
I'll be
free.
That today.
Yeah, videoland.org.
Videoland.org. Got it.
Hey, thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. It's a great question. How do I listen to audio at work on a movie? You could put headphones on, and it's just like a Walkman. And you know, it's funny how actually well movies work. Just audio only. Surprisingly well in a lot of cases. Except when the killer's sneaking up and all you hear is... Dun, 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 dun. I guess you know what's going on. Moving along. Jerome in Orange, California. Hi, Jerome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, sir.
This is great.
Hey, Jerome. How you doing?
I was talking to your screener, of course, and I told her I need a Dick Tracy device to talk to my mom in Michigan. I'm in California, and that's my mom would understand a Dick Tracy device.
Yeah, I understand. She doesn't want a complicated thing.
Yeah, but it's got to be bigger. She's 89, and so we need some kind of communication device so she can see us when we're talking to her. And she's got her arthritic fingers, but my wife was talking about the Nook. I don't know. I didn't look it up.
A Nook is not right, but you could do a Kindle Fire. Now, those aren't super big, although they have a new bigger one. Any tablet should be able to do Skype. But you want a tablet that has a camera.
Yeah, we're gonna do Skype.
Yeah. You want a tablet that has a camera because you want to be able to see Mom at the same time she sees you. Certainly, you know, an iPad would be perfect for this. What's your price? What's your budget, though?
I don't know. Before we answer that, does she have to have like a cable connection that has Wi-Fi? Because she has nothing.
Yeah.
She lives
okay.
Near Detroit.
If you can, she probably has 3G. So if you. You know, you're going to have to get internet access, obviously.
And that was it.
If
that
you get a device that has 3G built in, then it'll use that 3G. Now, you'll be paying $25 a month for internet access.
That's we're going to pay all the bills for
that. Yeah. Oh, that's great of you. I think this is a very nice thing to do, Jerome. An iPad mini or an iPad with LTE built in, you'll be getting it from Verizon, Sprint, or AT&T, depending on which carrier is better in her area. You're going to have to do some research on that.
That's what I thought. Okay.
And you want LTE if you can. I don't know if that area has LTE, but that's a lot faster and will give her a much better picture than 3G.
So any kind of iPad would be the best thing?
Yeah, I would. Well, or a Nexus would work as well, yep.
Nexus. Okay.
Yeah, and you can get the older iPads for reduced price. Apple still sells the 3 and the, I think they even sell the 2.
Well, I'm looking at a bigger screen, you know, because like I said, she's like 89.
Yeah, 10-inch screen should be big enough. I mean, even a 7-inch screen is probably big enough, but let's use a 10-inch. Yeah, I would get an iPad.
Oh, great.
iPad 2 or iPad 3.
She'll go crazy.
She would love it, and it'll be very easy because really what you do when you set it up is you move all the icons off the front screen. You just have one button for Skype. And you can set up Skype that it automatically, you know, when you run it, it automatically logs in. And you can even set it so that it automatically picks up when you call. So basically, she could just put it in front of her. And whenever you call, you'll appear and say, "Hey, Ma." And she'll go, "Oh,
that's gonna scare her.
Oh, Jerome."
She's got a good heart. It's her knees and the rest of her limbs that are all messed up.
Well, as long as her heart's okay, then I would do that.
You're great, Leo. I love you, man.
Oh, I love you too, Jerome. That's a nice thing for Mom.
Hearing,
oh, sorry. Yeah, you take care, too. My mom's 80, and it's funny. We phone. I should Skype her, shouldn't I? She's got an iPad. Send her an iPad. You know what, Mom? If you're watching, I'm going to set that up. Then you can see me. Of course, she watches the show. She sees enough of me, doesn't she? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Happy birthday to you.
thank you.
Happy birthday,
thank you.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, wow. So nice of you to get Britney Spears to go out and record that just for me. You know we have to now pay AOL Time Warner. Today is not my birthday. I wonder how much AOL Time Warner. Now, we don't have to because we pay ASCAP BMI license fees because it's a radio show, you know. But it is true that if you sing Happy Birthday in a movie, that AOL Time Warner comes after you. And that's because the song Happy Birthday, written by two sisters over 100 years ago, is still in copyright and was owned by Warner Chappell Music, which is owned by Time Warner, which is part of AOL Time Warner. And so it's expensive. It's expensive. So thanks. If I get a bill, Kyle, you're splitting it with me, right?
I'll take care of that.
My
for
happy birthday, Bill. Okay, last few minutes of the show, 8888 Ask Leo. Steve in Malibu. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how you doing today? Long-time listener.
I'm well, thank you.
Beautiful day, but I had a quick question for you. I was in the Sprint store. You know, they were giving the Galaxy 3 away on Friday for $50.
Yes, I saw that on Black Friday. Yep.
But lucky for me, by the time I got there, they were out of them. I don't like that phone. I don't like the screen. I don't like the display. I want the HTC LTE.
Get what you want, because I got to tell you, the price of the phone is such a small amount of the total cost of the phone. It's interesting how people are very aware of the price. Somebody asked me yesterday, hey, I can get the iPhone 4 for 99 cents on AT&T. Now, I said, well, wait a minute. Now, you know, that's three generations old. The iPhone 4S and the iPhone 5, both are newer. He said, yeah, but the iPhone 5 will cost me $200. I said, no, wrong. Both the iPhone 4 and the iPhone 5 will cost you around $100 a month for service, over $2,000.
Still paying thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
So the phone is a small part.
This phone is 10% or less of the total cost. So,
Leo, I'm standing in that store and I'm trying to figure out what version of Android it runs, and I find out that basically in the entire Sprint store, the only phones that have Jelly Bean are Galaxy 3 and the Note. The LTE doesn't have it. No one at HTC, no one at Sprint can tell me when it's going to get it. And I'm like, guys, what era are we in here? That new version's been out for months.
It is an issue on Android, and this is one that Apple makes great hay out of, because Apple has made the deal that we push the operating system updates on our schedule, and we make you update whether you're AT&T, Sprint, or Verizon. Android doesn't work that way, because each manufacturer has its own separate deal with the carrier. And Google has no influence on how this works at all. So Google is releasing new versions of Android on its own personal timetable. Last year they said, we really want to make sure that everybody gets updated. And they couldn't, because it's up to Samsung. It's up to HTC. And the reason it's complicated is because of the cost. It turns out that a carrier will update, if there's a bug or an exploit, the carrier will update it for free. So if Samsung comes to Sprint and says, oh my gosh, we got a bug, we've got to fix this, push this out, Sprint will do it, no problem, free. But if it's an operating system upgrade, the cost redounds to the manufacturer. So to go to Jelly Bean, Samsung pays, and I think it's fairly expensive. So there's less incentive for them to want to push that out.
Really?
Yeah, and HTC. And now HTC, I think, as I remember, HTC said, no, we're going to get Jelly Bean out by the end of the year.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, of course, on Sprint, they're selling an LTE phone, and they don't have an LTE network.
Yeah, well, they're getting it out. You know, we're going to have Sprint LTE here in my little town of Petaluma in the next month.
Okay.
So they are trying to get it out as fast as they can.
Yeah, they're a little behind, because I'm one of the chumps that bought the 4G network with the first Eve.
Yeah, and that was WiMAX. It was Clear. It was terrible. Clear Wire was terrible.
It never worked.
Never worked.
They're big issues, but I just hate to buy a phone that doesn't have the most current operating system. So
I understand. If it has ice cream sandwich, that's pretty good, but Jelly Bean did speed things up. It is better. I like Jelly Bean. I use a Galaxy Note 2, and one of the reasons I keep buying new Android phones is because I do want to have the new operating system.
The latest.
Yeah. So, by the way, one of the ways Samsung gets around this is to offer upgrades via Wi-Fi and an application. You download it from Samsung over the computer and then use their Keys program to put it on the phone. This is how they're getting around the exorbitant carrier charges. You're right to want this. You're also right to want LTE on Sprint. The real advantage Sprint offers is unlimited data.
Yeah, I'm locked in. My company uses it for just that reason. It's a company-wide thing, so we're sort of stuck.
Just
with
understand,
them,
there's no this that Samsung and HTC would like you to have the latest operating system, but Sprint doesn't care. It just costs them money, and it keeps you from getting a new phone next year.
Yeah, so they've got their. But that note is beautiful. But my wife was saying, "Oh, you should just get the note with the stylus." And I know you've been playing with one, but for the price, now there's an area where price does matter.
It's $300, right?
An iPad Mini for the price of one of those.
Yeah, it's expensive, $300.
But you like it a lot.
Well, it's big. You know, you have to want a big phone. I don't use the stylus very often, but if you are an artist or you're somebody who likes to take handwritten notes, that is a very nice feature. I'm very fond of this phone, but I don't think it's better necessarily than the S3. But I agree with you. The HTC One is fantastic. That's a nice phone.
Display.
I agree with you. I think a lot of people do that. It's certainly on a par with any of the Galaxy phones. So it's kind of a preference.
I know I'm crazy, but I love the kickstand. I use it all the time. I have an old Evo, and I still use the kickstand.
Did they say the One X has a kickstand? Huh?
No, the Evo LTE on Sprint.
The Evo does.
I don't know why everybody put them on their phones. It makes sense, doesn't it?
I guess. I don't know. Yes. I mean, I actually have a case that has a kickstand, so I guess you're right. I guess you do want that. Yeah, you know, nothing. Look, this is an imperfect world, and then nowhere more imperfect than in the world of cellular phones.
It's a wild and woolly world.
We just have to do the best we can.
I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Have a great one.
All right, you have a lovely day.
Enjoy. Is it nice weather in Malibu today?
Gorgeous. I'm about to go take my really old car out instead of my really new car.
Go down the Pacific Highway, Pacific Coast Highway?
Got a 65 Porsche Cabriolet and a Chevy Volt. How's that?
Oh, that's cool. But you're going to take the Cabriolet out. Keep the top down today.
Got it, man.
Yeah.
That's where I'm going. You have a good one.
I'm so jealous. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it. I'm so jealous. Kathy, Pomona, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Kathy.
Try one more.
Kathy! Hello, Kathy. Oh, nuts. There she... Okay, well, let's try Robert in Idlewild, California. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing fine. Hey, earlier in your show, you mentioned the sound bars for the entertainment systems weren't very effective.
You know, that's not quite right. So you just bought one?
I bought a Bose, paid about $1,400. It's a 5.1
Here's why sound bars are great. They're easy. You plug them in, and they use computer-generated imaging to generate a surround sound. Not quite as effective as multiple speakers, but there's no wiring. It's very simple. If you like the sound, that's fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.